Good morning to each one this morning. Greetings in Christ's name. It's a blessing to be together in the house of the Lord. We have a beautiful day on the outside, and I'm thankful for that. Thankful for the sunshine. I try to be thankful otherwise too, but I'm especially thankful for the sun this time of the year. I believe we probably all are. This morning I'm thankful to be here with you again. It seems like it's been a while. I came in and sat down this morning, and I leaned over and told Brother Jerry, I said, there's too many faces here I don't recognize. I think it's been a little bit since I've been here, so it's good to be here with you this morning and bring you greetings in Christ's name from the Pine Grove congregation as well. And I trust that as we look into God's word, we can be encouraged. We can be drawn to a closer walk with him again today. We have been thus far. I've appreciated the singing, the teaching of the word, looking into the Sunday school lesson. It's been a blessing to me. This morning, you can turn with me to the book of Joshua. I would like to look at a character in the Bible, and you can probably guess which character that is by where we're turning to. I'd like to look at Joshua this morning and how he demonstrated to us the proper approach to living our life, and also learn some lessons from an improper approach. So I'd like to use him as an example. The title for the message this morning is maybe a little bit of a different one. A question: who is in your driver's seat? I'll set this little vehicle here. Hopefully it'll stay here for now. I ask you the question: who is in your driver's seat? Not going to be referring directly to that immediately here. We'll get to that. So looking here at Joshua, I'm going to use him as an example. I'd like to begin reading in verse 1. Joshua chapter 1, verse 1. I'm going to give just a brief overview of Joshua to help set the tone, to give you a little bit of an idea of the character of Joshua and how his character led him into some of the decisions that he made. So, Joshua chapter 1, verse 1. Now, after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, it came to pass that the Lord spake unto Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' minister, saying, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now, therefore, arise and go over this Jordan, thou and all this people, unto the land which I do give them, even to the children of Israel. Every place that the sole of your foot shall tread upon, that have I given unto you, as I said unto Moses, from the wilderness and this Lebanon, even unto the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, and unto the great sea, toward the going down of the sun, shall be your coast. There shall not any man be able to stand before thee all the days of thy life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with thee. I will not fail thee, nor forsake thee. Be strong and of good courage, for unto this people shalt thou divide and inheritance the land which I swear unto their fathers to give them. Only be thou strong and very courageous, that thou mayest observe to do according to all the law which Moses, my servant, commanded thee. Turn not from it to the right hand or to the left, that thou mayest prosper whithersoever thou goest. In this passage, we have God empowering Joshua in a mighty way. If you can imagine Joshua, what may have been going through his mind at this point in time, the thought of filling the shoes, as it were, of Moses, the leader that he had looked up to, the leader that had been there. Joshua, having walked with Moses, had seen many miracles. He had seen a lot of things take place, things that God had done through Moses. So God is here empowering Joshua and saying, I'm going to be faithful. I'm going to be faithful to you. I'm going to make you strong. I'm going to work through you just like I did Moses. I'm going to do that for you. So again, if you can imagine a bit, try to imagine being in Joshua's shoes and feeling those feelings, and then God coming and speaking to Moses or to Joshua and saying, I'm going to be with you just like I was with Moses. And so imagine the feeling that came down through him, the feeling of the infilling presence of God, the infilling of the power, the Spirit of God, the support from God saying, I will be faithful to you. Jumping down now to verse 16. And these now are the words of the people. These are the people responding now to Joshua. Verse 16, it says, and they answered Joshua, saying, all that thou commandest us, we will do. And whithersoever thou sendest us, we will go, according as we hearkened unto Moses. In all things, so will we hearken unto thee. Only the Lord thy God be with thee, as he was with Moses. Whosoever he be that rebel against the commandment, and will not hearken unto thy words, and all that thou commandest him, he shall be put to death. Only be strong and of a good courage. And so the people make a commitment here to Joshua, saying, we're going to be faithful. We will be faithful. And anyone that doesn't listen, what does it say? They'll be put to death. Anyone that doesn't obey your commands. But we're going to stand with you, Joshua. We will be sure to stand with you and do what you tell us and let you lead us. In chapter 2. If you remember, we're not going to just go down through and read all this story, but in chapter 2, they were preparing to take over that first city. And many of you younger ones even probably know that story, the things that happened there, the taking over of Jericho. So they were getting ready to take Jericho. And Joshua sent spies into the city of Jericho. And if you remember, they went to Rahab, the harlot, and they were there. And when they were there, Rahab confirmed to them that even the people of the city were concerned, they were afraid, we're scared of the Israelites. We are sure that Joshua and the Israelites are going to overcome us. And so they even gave testimonies to these spies that is how the people inside of the city were feeling. So the spies came back, chapter 2. Verse 24, and they said unto Joshua, truly the Lord hath delivered into our hands all the land, for even all the inhabitants of the country do faint because of us. They became aware of that. They knew that. So the people of Jericho were even afraid before the Israelites had even begun to march against them. And we drop to chapter 3. In chapter 3, they are preparing. The Jordan River stood in between them and this city, Jericho. And so in chapter 3, they are preparing to cross that. I want to point out one phrase that I want us to take note of in chapter 3. The first phrase, I believe it's the first phrase. Yes, in chapter 3, verse 1, it says, and Joshua rose early. I think there's something significant about that. We will just refer to that again here maybe a bit as we go along. But I find it interesting that in about the first, I think it's about the first 8 chapters, if I remember correctly, there are 5 times that it alludes to this fact that Joshua rose up early. He got up at daybreak. I think there's something significant about that, something that we can learn from that. I think Joshua was a man of purpose. He was a man of purpose. He was concerned he about his time alone with God, about listening to God, to what God had for him. He was a man that was leading, and he was determined to do his best. He was determined to fulfill the responsibilities that was laid upon him the way God wanted him to do it. And in doing that, he got up early sometimes so that he could I don't know. I guess thinking of it in my own way, but so that he could think clearly. It was quiet. He could get up and think clearly. I think he was looking forward to the next day. He was looking forward to that day. What does God have for us today? What is God going to do for us today? How is he going to show himself? How am I going to lead? He got up early. And then it says, again in chapter 3, verses 5 through 7, "And Joshua said unto the people, Sanctify yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do wonders among you. And Joshua spake unto the priests, saying, Take up the ark of the covenant, and pass over before the people. And they took up the ark of the covenant, and went before the people. And the Lord said unto Joshua, This day will I begin to magnify thee in the sight of all Israel, that they may know that as I was with Moses, so I will be with you, so I will be with thee. And so God came and began to tell Joshua. He gave him instructions. He gave him instructions on how to cross the river. He was to have the priest bring the ark. And he said, as the priests come, and as soon as they put their foot into the water, the waters will part, and they will be able to cross to the other side. And he gave them other instructions. When they get across the river, this was still leading up to that. He said, have 12 men representing the 12 tribes. Have each of them take a stone out of the river as they go through and take it to the other side. And when they got to the other side, what happened? We know Joshua took those stones and he laid up an altar and they worshiped. They worshiped God. And that there's another part here that is interesting to me, that Joshua said, when you come back here years from now, and your children ask, what is this altar all about? Tell them it's because of the mighty things that God did for us in the crossing of the Jordan. I find it interesting that even with this thing of all that was on Joshua's mind, the thing of coming up to Jericho, how is this all going to work out? How are we going to be able to do this? In other words, we could say the pressures of life, the things that are around us, the things that are looming on our mind. these things were in back of Joshua's mind, probably not so far back, but how are we going to do this? What's it going to take to overcome Jericho? How am I going to lead this group who has been wandering in the wilderness for 40 years? But even with all of that in his mind, in the back of his mind, he took the time to say, don't forget to teach your children. I like that. I think there's something there for us. Instruct them. Joshua led the children of Israel up to that water. And what happened? It happened just as God had said it would. The priests came, their feet went into the water, the waters parted, they went across, and it worked out exactly as the Lord had told Joshua it would. In chapter 4, verse 14, it says, on that day, the Lord magnified Joshua in the sight of all Israel, and they feared him as they feared Moses all the days of his life. The people respected Joshua. Why? Because it was evident that he was following God's instructions. He was faithful in doing that. I'm sure that was a great part of it. They saw that he was a man of God, and they respected him for it. When he followed God's instructions as God had told him, God was faithful in fulfilling those promises, and the people feared Joshua as they did Moses all the days of his life. Moving on now to verse 20 of chapter 4. And those 12 stones which they took out of the Jordan did Joshua pitch in Gilgal. And he spake unto the children of Israel, saying, when your children shall ask their fathers in time to come, saying, what mean these stones? Then ye shall let your children know, saying, Israel came over this Jordan on dry land, for the Lord your God dried up the waters of Jordan from before you until ye passed over, as the Lord your God did to the Red Sea, which he dried up from before us until we were gone over, that all the people of the earth might know the hand of the Lord, that it is mighty, that ye might fear the Lord your God forever. So there, again, there's an interesting part of this that came into play, and that is as Joshua and the children of Israel were faithful to the Lord and fulfilled what he asked of them, the people of the land began to fear them. I believe that the people of the land began to recognize that there was some power here. They were this this was something different. I believe they began to recognize that God was faithful to them and was faithful to the children of Israel and was working through them. Chapter 5, verse 1 says, "And it came to pass, when all the kings of the Amorites, which were on the side of Jordan westward, and all the kings of the Canaanites, which were by the sea, heard that the Lord had dried up the waters from Jordan, from the waters of Jordan, from before the children of Israel, until we were passed over, that their hearts melted, neither was their spirit in them any more, because of the children of Israel." So because of what God had done, because Joshua allowed God to work through him, this is what caused people to be fearful. It's what caused the people of the land there to fear and to sit up and take notice. Something was going on here. Something for real was taking place. It wasn't because of the mighty things that Joshua had done. It was because of what God had done and what Joshua had allowed God to do through him. You know, I think, again, put yourself into Joshua's shoes. Joshua began to follow these instructions from the Lord. Maybe at first Joshua wasn't quite sure, you know, how was this all going to work out? How was this going to take place? Maybe at first he was a bit unsure of himself, but as God began to work through him, I believe that Joshua began to gain confidence that, yes, God is in this. And isn't that the way it works for us today? As we begin following Christ, we see how God works. We experience those things. We allow God to direct our lives, and it gives us continuing strength. It gives us confidence that, yes, God is in this. We have it. We have it in our hearts. So again, God was going to fulfill his promises to work in Joshua just as he had done through Moses. But again, back in the back of his mind, I still think that Joshua was remembering Jericho. Jericho's in front of me. I have to deal with Jericho. Yes, God was faithful. He brought us through Jordan. The waters parted. It was wonderful. It was a miracle. But Jericho, that's the next thing he had to face. So, Joshua. One morning, I'm going to assume it was morning since he liked to get up early. The Bible doesn't say one morning. But one day Joshua got up and he looks toward Jericho. What does it say? It says he saw a man standing there with a raised sword. Joshua looked at him and he said, you find this in chapter 5. Chapter 5, the end of verse 13. He cried out, "Art thou for us or for our adversaries?" So he sees this man with a raised sword, and he says, "Are you on our side? Are you on our side? Or are you not on our side? Are you against us?" Thank you. "Are you for us or against us?" So, verse 14. This man says, and he said, "Nay, but as captain of the host of the Lord am I now come." Again, I've really enjoyed in studying this, trying to put myself, imagining myself being in Joshua's shoes. And I think it's good for us to maybe do that at times. But if you can imagine Joshua, he wasn't sure how he was going to battle Jericho. Now here is this man with a sword. He sees this man with a sword. And I suppose that at first he was probably somewhat fearful. I think I would have been. But he was somewhat fearful. I can imagine that he was. He may not have been. But as he speaks to this man, the man says, "I am captain of the Lord's hosts." Can you imagine the relief that Joshua, that must have come over Joshua, the relief that Joshua just could have been thinking, "The Lord has done it again. He's done it again. He's just so faithful. He sent the captain of his army to fight for us." Can you imagine the empowering that Joshua probably felt? Can you imagine maybe Joshua going back to camp and saying, "Men, get up, the captain of the Lord's host is here. He's going to fight with us. He's been so faithful. And here he's going to go with us to war." And Joshua getting his army awake and getting ready to go to battle. Wouldn't if that would have happened, wouldn't have that been in our minds maybe kind of a a perfect picture. Well, that's not what he did. We read here a little farther, that is not what he did. I find it very interesting, again, the last part of that verse 14, what does it say? It says, and Joshua fell on his face to the earth. How many times do we miss that part? Joshua fell on his face to the earth. He didn't run back to the camp with it. He didn't run back all excited and like maybe the perfect picture we would tend to think. But he fell on his face to the earth. And Joshua fell on his face to the earth and did worship and said unto him, what saith my Lord unto his servant? God, what do you have to say to me? What am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to lead? God, I'm here to hear what instructions from you. And the captain of the Lord's host said unto Joshua, loose thy shoes from off thy foot, for the place whereon thou standest is holy. And Joshua did so. Joshua's response. When I think of what maybe I would have done in Joshua's shoes, I probably would have taken that first approach, that scenario that I gave you. Unbelievable. The Lord sent his captain of hosts to fight with us. But that's not what Joshua did. There are two things that Joshua did. Number one, first of all, he worshiped. He worshiped. It says he fell on his face to worship. He recognized that God was there. The second thing is that he followed instructions. What did the captain of the Lord's host say? You're on holy ground. Take off your shoes. He obeyed. He did that. What do I do? What do I do? What do you do when we are in a situation like that? You know, there are times in our lives when we are feeling confident, when things are maybe going well. Maybe it's when you ask Christ into your life and you feel like God has just revealed himself to you and you feel confident. I'm going to refer to that this morning as being in a vehicle. We have this vehicle here. We've been driving our vehicle. We've been going down through life. We've been driving this vehicle, and what happens when we invite Christ into our life? He wants to get in with us. Up until now, I've been over here. I've been in this driver's seat. I've been going down the road. I've been in control, so I think anyway. I go where I want to go. I do the things that I want to do. I'm driving. I can put on the brakes. I can step on the gas. I'm in control. Up until now, I've been over here in the driver's seat. But now we've asked God to come in our life. So we invite him in. Where are we going to put him? I want to have the Lord walk with me in my life. I want to have him ride with me in my life. That sounds good, doesn't it? I want the Lord. Sounds good and proper, doesn't it? And so we open up this door over here. We open up this door over here and we say, God, hop in. I want you to walk with me. Get in with me and ride with me, God. I want to be able to reach over here, God. I want to be able to reach over here and feel you. I want to be able to reach over here and feel your presence with me as we go through life. I want to be able to touch you, God. I want to be able to have you by my side. I want to feel your faithfulness. And so we invite him in. We invite him in this door. And there he is. So now he's in the car with us. He's in the car with us. And we are going down the road. Guess what? That is not what Joshua did. That is not what Joshua did. When Joshua met the Lord, he didn't take the Lord back to the camp with him and rouse his troops and say, men, let's go to battle. He didn't do that. But instead, he knelt down and he worshiped. And then he invited to get in. He invited God to get in. Not over here in this passenger seat. Not over here, but over here in the driver's seat. He got out. Joshua got out of the driver's seat and he got in the passenger seat. God was now driving. God was in control. And God began to speak to Joshua and reveal to him how he was to go from here, how he was to in this particular case, conquer Jericho. Joshua chapter 6, verses 1 and 2. Now Jericho was straitly shut up because of the children of Israel. None went out, none came in. And the Lord said unto Joshua, see, I have given into thine hand Jericho and the king thereof and the mighty men of valor. So God promises Joshua victory. The people of Jericho were already afraid. Just because of what God had been doing, it had an effect on them. They were afraid. But even then, Joshua didn't jump up and rally his troops and say, you know, let's go to battle. God said, I will be faithful. I will give them to you. You will overcome them. But Joshua continued to listen. He continued to listen to the Lord, and he took instruction. Put that in the back of your mind. Let's remember that. Continue to listen to the Lord and take instruction. So God laid out a battle plan that we would say today seems very unconventional, and it was. Seemed very unconventional. He laid out a battle plan of what they were supposed to do. Children, you probably know this. I'm sure you remember. A lot of you remember this story. If you remember, he told the children of Israel to go up and march around the city for 7 days, once a day for 7 days. He told them that on the seventh day, they were to march it around it. How many times? How many times? Any of you? Seven. They were to march around it 7 times on the seventh day. After those instructions, then the Bible says what? Joshua rose up early. There we have it again. Joshua rose up early. He was determined to fulfill what God had told them to do. I think he probably got the people up early too. He said, God has told us to march around the city. And Joshua was faithful in fulfilling that. He didn't take his own plan. Does this plan make any sense? Take your army and march around the city and not do anything? It doesn't make any sense in our mind. But God had a plan, and Joshua was faithful in following that plan. Well, we know what happened. On the seventh day, they marched around it 7 times, and they all shouted, and the walls came down, and there was a victory. Chapter 6, verse 21 says, and they utterly destroyed all that was in the city, both man and woman, young and old, and ox and sheep and ass with the edge of the sword. There was utter destruction. This morning, God's way is perfect. Do we believe that? God's way is perfect. Even when we don't understand where he leads, even when we don't understand what his plans are, God's way is still best, even if we don't know why he does what he does. Chapter 6, verse 24, or verse 27. So the Lord was with Joshua, and his fame was noised throughout all the country. It is an amazing God that we serve this morning. An amazing God. It is an amazing God that Joshua served. And because of his faithfulness, people were able to see God's mighty power. Can you imagine what the neighboring nations may have been saying? You wouldn't believe what happened. That group of Israelites, first of all, they came across the river on dry land, and then they marched around that city for 7 days, and the walls fell down. Can you imagine the testimony that was? Just because Joshua chose to put God not in the passenger seat, but he put him over here in the driver's seat. He allowed God to control what happened, how to do it, how to go about it, not to be just faithful to them. He didn't want God's presence just to prove his faithfulness to them. He wasn't just with them through battle. He wasn't there just to encourage them. He wasn't there that they could just reach out and touch him and feel his presence in that way. But no, Joshua got out. He got out of being in control. He got out of the driver's seat and he allowed God in this door. And God was faithful. God was very faithful. Well, that is an exciting story to me. I enjoy reading this story and thinking about it. It goes on to the next chapter now. They look at the next city. The next city was Ai. So again, doing a little bit of imagining here. The next city was Ai, and I assume that Joshua thought, we got through Jericho now. That wasn't so bad. Ai is such a small city, it won't be a big deal. He's feeling so blessed. God led us. God was faithful. I can almost sense that Joshua could hardly wait. The Lord has been faithful. He said he's going to give this land to us. Why not Ai? And so what did he do? He sent out spies to Ai. The spies came back and they said, it's no problem. Not a problem at all. It's a small city. We'll send 2,000 troops, maybe 3,000 at the most. Shouldn't be any problem to destroy it. And so Joshua said, do it. Let's do it. And so he took 3,000 men, sent them to Ai. Ai came out. We know what happened. Ai chased the men back to the camp. What was there? 36 of them. 36 of the Israelites were killed. Well, what happened? I can imagine the chaos in the camp of the Israelites, the devastation. What happened? Well, Joshua, after what had happened, after that happened, came to the Lord and began to pour out his heart. God, why? Why did this happen? What is it? What have we done? Why have you not allowed us to conquer Ai? Let's read a bit here in chapter 7, verse 10. And the Lord said unto Joshua, get thee up. Wherefore liest thou thus upon thy face? Israel hath sinned. We know Joshua was not aware of this sin. Joshua was not aware of what had taken place, of the sin that was in the camp. He didn't know it was there to hinder the plan to overtake Ai. What can we learn from that? Sin separates us from God. It did back then, and it still does today. When God is in the driver's seat, like he was through the battle of Jericho, all went fine. All went well. But when they got to Ai, sin was in the camp. You know, I don't believe that God opened the door and got out. God was still there. But the Israelites, because of their sin, separated themselves from God. The sin that was in the camp separated them. There was no place, and there is no place for sin with God. None. Not compromising. When there is sin in our lives, it separates us from God, period. There is an automatic parting. You know, it's not something that we have to do. When there is sin in our lives, we don't have to choose to step away from God. Sin separates us automatically from God. I think it's so important that we keep our lives current with Christ. What I mean by that is, as things happen and we make mistakes, and they will, I don't want to minimize the faithfulness of God and the power to live in victory, but we are human beings that have weaknesses, we have failings, we live in the flesh, and we will fail. We will fail at times. What do we do about that? I believe it's so important that we take care of those things as they come, and not put it off, to keep a clear conscience between us and God. We need to do that individually. But you know what? I really believe that we need to do it collectively as well. And that's where I wonder sometimes if there isn't a little bit of a breakdown. We tend to feel like our failings, our weaknesses, that's between me and God. And it is. There's an element where that is the case. But I think that we are robbing ourselves of a blessing and of the power and strength that would be there with it if we would, you know, just share these things collectively with our brethren, one another. And it's an area that I want to grow in. I want to do more of that. But there is strength in that, and that's I would encourage each of us to Maybe you do that. Maybe you do that all the time here. I don't know, but I think I know mankind well enough that we shy away from that. But we need to do it, yes, individually, between us and God, but we need to do it collectively with the brotherhood. And we do that. We do that as we come together and acknowledge, you know, I think of communion time. We come together and acknowledge that we have peace with God and man. We examine our lives and make sure that it all is clear in our hearts. But I believe it is so important that we share with each other, share our struggles. We're in it together. Let's share our struggles with each other, with the brotherhood. Let's be there and then encourage each other. Not only share our struggles with each other, but share our victories. How God has blessed me this week. I was struggling in this area. Here's what happened and how God blessed me and how I rose above that. I want to share that to be an encouragement. We do well. That does wonders to each of us as we do that. Moving on, chapter 7, verse 12. Therefore the children of Israel could not stand before their enemies, but turned their backs before their enemies, because they were accursed. Neither will I be with you anymore, except ye destroy the accursed thing, the accursed from among you. God told Joshua, this is why you weren't able to conquer Ai, because of the sin. He says, not sure which verse it is, verse 13, up, sanctify the people and say, sanctify yourselves against tomorrow. Get rid of it, clean it up. Verse 16, the first part, we have those words again. So Joshua rose up early in the morning, after God had given Joshua instructions, told him what it would take. The next morning, early in the morning, Joshua got up and they began to go through, separating the tribes. They figured out who it was that had sinned, that it was Achan. Achan was found out and he was forced to confess the sin that he had in his life. And they removed that sin from the camp. They took him out. They took Achan, all his family, and they took him out to Achor, and they stoned him and they heaped a big pile of stones on top of him. They got rid of the sin. They buried it, literally. The camp was cleansed from that. And so the first thing I think that kept them from being able to overcome Ai was the sin that was in the camp. The second thing that I've thought about, the second thing that I think may have been a reason was the fact that we don't find record that Joshua at any time before he went to Ai confided in the Lord. You read that. We don't find that. Where he asked God, how shall we do this? What is your plan for Ai? You had a plan for Jericho. What is your plan? You know, I tend to feel like if Joshua would have went into that dialogue with the Lord, that the Lord would have pointed out to him that there was sin in the camp, that not all was well. Now was not the time. There's something in the camp. There's something that is not right. It's not time yet. And Joshua could have dealt with that and lives could have been spared. I believe that. And Joshua could have taken care of that. But Joshua, maybe in his excitement, maybe in his just feeling confident of what God had done for them in Jericho, Joshua moved forward and he made a mistake that I think could have been avoided. I don't know about you, but that sounds pretty familiar to me. Does that sound familiar to you? Sometimes in our zeal and in our enthusiasm, we take things into our own hands, plow forward. Doesn't always work out so well. Anyway, God comes back to Joshua in chapter 8. Now, the sin is taken care of. He comes back to Joshua in chapter 8, verse 1. And the Lord said unto Joshua, fear not, neither be thou dismayed. Take all the people of war with thee, and arise, go up to Ai. See, I have given into thy hand the king of Ai and his people and his city and his land. Verse 2, and thou shalt do to Ai and her king as thou didst unto Jericho and her king. Only the spoil thereof and the cattle thereof shall ye take for a prey unto yourselves. Lay thee in ambush for the city behind it. So God tells Joshua, you have taken care of the problem. The sin is gone. Fear not. At that point, Joshua gets back into the car. He gets back in. God is still driving. Joshua fulfills what God has told them to do. Destroy Ai and keep the spoils from it. God took control of the vehicle again. God took control of the car. And he expertly and with knowing ways just gave them direction. And they were able to conquer. There was victory. You know, we see that in Joshua's life. But I would like for us to now, just here at the end, think of our life a little more specifically. Which side is God in? Did you open this door on the passenger side? Did he get in? It doesn't matter which side God's in. He's the same distance from us, right? So if we are over here in the driver's seat, it's just as far to reach over to the passenger seat as if we were in the passenger seat reaching over to the driver's seat, isn't it? This morning, there is a difference. There's a big difference. How do we find it? You know, when I am over here in the passenger seat, I really can't say where the car is going. I can do a lot of talking. I can do a lot of crying out. But I can't steer it. When God is in control, when he has the steering wheel, and is steering it, I don't have say where that car is going. When the road gets bumpy, rough, there's a lot of roads right now that are pretty rough, at least in our area. When the roads start going up and down, I can still reach over and hold his hand. I can still reach over and touch him. He's still in the car. But guess what? Better yet, he's driving. He's driving my car. It is not me driving. Where is he at in your car today? Where is he at in your vehicle, in your life? Have you opened the door and allowed him to get in over here on the passenger side? Or did you get out and you come over to the passenger side and invite him in the driver's side? Is he the one that is driving? Are you sitting over there riding? You are there for the ride. God, wherever you want to go, I'm glad to be a passenger. I will follow. I will be faithful. Where are you at with your family? Where is your family at in that car? Is God in the driver's seat of your family? Does he make decisions where you as a family go, where you're at in life? Does he make the decisions, what you do? Does your family even know that God is in the driver's seat? Can they tell? Or do they think that dad's driving? Maybe it's mom. Do they know? Do they know that God is in control of your family? What about you as youth? I was blessed by seeing all of you youth here this morning. Is God in your driver's seat? Are you still driving? Maybe you have that windshield good and clear so that you can look out and you can take directions, right? I got the windshield clean, God. I can see where I'm going. God, give me directions. Is that how it is? God, which way shall I go? And then we are still driving, but we're taking directions from God. Is that how it is? Does God have enough say in your life that you would allow him to steer you into unknown things, like maybe voluntary service on the mission field? Maybe it's teaching school. Maybe it's something else. Maybe it looks big and unknown. Maybe it's a bit scary. Is God allowed to drive you there? Or do you have control of it? And you say, well, not quite yet, God. You apply the brakes. Not quite yet, God. I'm not ready to go there. Maybe sometime, but not right now. I have to get a little more financially stable. You know, I'm pretty young. I don't have a lot of money. Isn't that taking the wheel back? What about you older people? Where are you at? You know, God still likes to drive your car. Maybe you think that the tires are starting to go flat. Maybe the rubber's gone. Maybe the bearings seem to be getting a little dry and squeaky. Does it feel that way sometimes? I don't have just a whole lot to offer. I feel pretty dry, pretty squeaky. God, let's just park it. I want to enjoy the scenery. I want to watch everybody else do it. I don't think so. Maybe you're tempted to think that God drove my car for so many miles, I'm just going to park it and enjoy life, enjoy what I'm seeing. I'm going to look out from inside the car. I'm not going to keep it going. Let's not go there. Let's not do that. There are ways that you can serve. Keep on serving. There are lots of times that, I was going to say we as younger people, not sure where I find myself. But there are lots of times that we as younger people could use someone to walk by our side. We need the older ones. I do. We all do. We need them to walk with us and give encouragement. We need them to give us instruction. All of us younger ones, we need that. I hope you feel that way. Sometimes in the middle of the battle, in the business of raising family, it just feels good to have older people encouraging us. There are a number of people, older people, in my life that I view just that way. They are just a real encouragement to me in the things that I'm facing. So I'd say to you older folks, maybe there's not very many here. Maybe none of you feel like you're in that category. I don't know. But don't get out of the car. When you do get to that point where you do feel like you're old and squeaky, tires may be flat, don't get out of the car. Don't park it. Stay in the car. Allow God to drive it. Wherever you're at in life, whether you're a youth, whether you're an older person, whether you are a middle-aged person, wherever you are at this morning, who is in your driver's seat and who's driving? Let's kneel for prayer.